Welcome to Staples.
Hi, Staples guy. I need to get my kids ready for back to school.
Well, Staples has everything they need at low prices, like comp books for just 50 cents, so they'll be 110% ready.
Wait, that's 10% more ready than totally ready.
Yep.
That extra 10% evens it all out.
Sorry?
Well, I'm usually 10 minutes late getting them to school, so.
That doesn't even it out.
Yeah, sure it does.
Make low prices happen. Make 110% ready happen. Staples. Make more happen. Staples filler paper is just 75 cents, all season long.
Limit 30 per customer in store. Limit 10 per customer online with $25 minimum purchase. Ends 9/12/15.
Here we go.
Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to AMC Press & Co. We welcome you whether you're on planet Mars. This means aliens can hear us. Brilliant. We wondered where those came from. We were all talking about it in the office. Short notes. Very quickly before we begin, we are an affiliate of Blog Talk Radio Network. We would like to express the views and opinions of the hosts are not shared with any affiliates or sponsors. View discretion is advised.
Well, welcome to AMC Press & Co. This brings us to a very special edition we have on our lovely show, Philip Hernandez, who has been in Kiss of the Spider Woman, The Cape Man, Law and Order, he has a recurring role in Gotham and Nurse Jackie, as well as The Mistress of Laura, as well as a lot of other things. You can catch him on, look up his stuff on philiphernandez.net or follow him on Twitter at philip24601. If you're not catching that, that's probably a Les Mis reference, and we'll get into more of that later. Also, where can you find us? Well, you can find us on Facebook under AMC Press & Co., as well as our Twitter handlers, AMC Press 31 and AMC Press News. And if you have any questions, you can reach us and Philip Hernandez at 323-792-2996 and press 1. That's 323-792-2996 and press 1. So, I guess let's open it up. How are you feeling tonight, Philip?
I feel fantastic. Thank you for having me on your show.
You're welcome. You're welcome. We're excited to have you. We've been looking forward to this all week. I've been pinning up on Gotham episodes and Nurse Jackie episodes and stuff like that. But Allison, what have you been doing?
What have I been doing? Oh, you, okay.
What have I been doing? No.
Well,
Allison,
okay, who's
then... talking? Sorry about that.
Or you could just go into it.
Or we can just go into it. What have you been doing? Hello?
Yes.
What have you been doing?
What have I been doing? Oh my goodness, I've been doing so much. What have I been doing? You mean like today or this week?
This week, this month. I mean, in the most recent months, we saw that you were at the Gotham Rat Party.
I did go to the Gotham Rat Party. That was fun.
Yeah. How was that?
Oh, it was really, really wonderful. It's such a nice group of people, and they're so so incredibly professional, and it's a really a first class operation all around. And I just loved working there. It was just fantastic, and it's been It's been great, and the party was really great. They threw a beautiful party at a club in Brooklyn, and a good time was had by all. It was really lovely. And I got to take my daughter there, which was really nice. So
that's even better.
Yeah, it's her first time in a club, and she's going to be a film student at SUNY Purchase. She got accepted into their film program. She wants to be a film director. And
congratulations
to
her.
Party. Oh, it's just a wonderful thing. Yes, thank you so much. I'm so proud of her.
You're welcome. Welcome.
Yeah,
I mean, did you get to meet Penguin at all?
Yes, of course.
Ah! I'm a huge fan of his. We all are on the show. We all are on the show. But what was it like, I guess, Allison, do you have questions, right, for Philip?
Yes.
Yeah.
How did you get started in acting?
I got started in acting, seriously, when I was in college, it kind of happened by accident. I mean, I did a couple of things in high school. I did Oklahoma, the musical, in high school, and I played Will Parker. And then I did this other original musical that one of the teachers had written. But it wasn't, you know, I had sung in the chorus, and so I did the shows, and you know, they asked me to be in those, and I said, yeah, okay, fine. But I wasn't serious about it, really, until I got to college and I started acting. I had studied voice in high school as well. But then when I got to college, I didn't study voice, and I was going to be a business major. And I ended up helping my college roommate, who was a theater major, my freshman college roommate. I helped him learn his lines for a play that he was auditioning for. He was auditioning for Tennessee Williams' Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, and he wanted to play Brick, one of the lead roles. And so he asked me if I would help him run his lines, and I said, sure. And he said, hey, you know, you're pretty good, so why don't you come audition too? And I was like, no. And he said, no, come on, it'll be fun. I was like, all right, so we went. And so I got cast as Big Daddy, and he got cast as Brick. So that was my first real play. And I was terrified, but I started learning the material way in advance, because I was so terrified I was going to make a fool of myself. And I bought a big box of cigars, and I started watching all the old people, because Big Daddy is 65 years old, and I was like 18 at the time. And so I started watching how old people moved and how they walked, and, you know, so I would watch them from my window that overlooked this department store, where a lot of old people would get off the bus, and they would go indented into the store, and downstairs where there was this little food counter where people would sit and have lunch. So I would smoke cigars, and I would watch the old people move, and I wore a path back and forth in my living room, just trying to emulate their movements and, you know, feel kind of where they felt their stiffnesses and get used to the cigars. And so I did that, and I found a book on acting called Acting is Believing by a guy named Charles McGaw. And I did every exercise that I could in that book. And this was all out of sheer fear. But I did that, and the play went enormously well, and I got a lot of positive feedback, and I realized I had really enjoyed trying to figure out, you know, what made these people tick. I had also taken some psychology classes in that first semester, and I thought, you know, this might be something I'd like to explore more. So I started taking a bunch of theater classes, and I took directing, and I took, you know, a scene shop, I found that I really, really liked it. And so I ended up, that was what my major became. And then after that, I left college. I graduated from college, and I pursued a career as a professional actor. And that's kind of how I got started. I often.
That's incredible. I mean, I had a similar start, because of the fact that we have learned disabilities on the show, right? I have ADHD. Right, and ADHD mm-hmm. and acting go together only when you have your medicine in you. Okay, that's
yes.
when you can actually concentrate, they go together. It's
yep.
a magic spell. People think it's a magic spell, but it is a magic spell. It's a magic feat. So, I mean, the only way I could ever get over lines, truthfully, was to ask myself questions about the characters or about the lines. And so that's how I memorized lines. And it was like every part I've ever had, I've had sheer fear that I was going to actually, something was going to happen where they were going to figure me out, or they were going to go, oh, yeah, no, he's not right. Oh, he has a learning disability. Oh, we can't do it. We can't do the insurance thing. You know, we can't be responsible. So I guess my fear was, God damn it, learn your lines. Or, you know, whatever. But I wasn't shoved into it, but it was interesting. I mean, but I had a question of at least how was it playing two roles in Les Mis? What, in terms of Jean Valjean is very different from Javert, right? What was your process like, I mean, in developing each role, you know?
Well, fortunately, I didn't have to play them both at the same time. So that made it much easier. Mm. I could do one at a time. And I played Jean Valjean first,
right.
which was really an amazing experience because I didn't have any association with the musical. I hadn't seen it or heard it or read the novel before I auditioned for it. So I just kind of learned the material cold and, you know, then went in and auditioned. So I was, you know, just kind of going on instinct and what I, you know, had in front of me in terms of the sides or the portions of the script.
Right.
For those who don't know what sides are, you know, just it's the portions of the script that they give you to read at the audition or to sing at the audition. So, you know, so I just went in with that and made some choices. And so it was an interesting journey because I had to learn it very quickly. I had, I guess, about a week and a half to learn this monster role. At the time, it was
wow.
the running time of the show was 3 hours and 15 minutes. So it was a lot of stage time.
That was eventually cut down, right?
Eventually, it was cut down. It was cut down because they had to pay the orchestra overtime every time they went
right.
past 3 hours. So they would try to get it in, you know, at 11 o'clock, you know, before 11 o'clock. And a lot of times we did the curtain call without an orchestra. Because, of course, there was, you know, encore, you know, music. I mean, so, you know, they would play for the curtain call. But if it got to be 11 o'clock, they would say, okay, you're done. And then we would just take the bows in silence. But, yeah,
wow.
they did definitely shut it down, you know, I mean, cut it down, rather. So, yeah, but the process was, like you were saying earlier, it's about asking questions. It's about seeing what your character says, seeing what other characters say about your character. I went back and I read the novel, that whole big, thick, you know,
wow.
massive piece.
How long did it take to read that?
Oh, gosh, I don't remember, but I read it. I read it a couple of times, you know, because, you know, I wanted to keep on learning. Even when I had the role, I mean, I kept reading the novel and going over it and just, you know, making additional choices and changes and because I'm a tinkerer. So, you know, because once you do it, I want to keep going deeper and deeper and deeper and find more and more and more. Because it keeps it interesting for me, it keeps it interesting for the people who I'm acting with, it keeps it interesting for audiences who are going to see it. It makes it a deeper, richer experience for everyone. So, you know, so I used the novel as source material, and then, of course, the text and the music that I had, because the text is one thing, but then the music also influences, you know, how you do things and how you think about the character. And I just did what I do. you know, learned the lines, you know, explored who this man is, what does he want? You know, what does he need desperately? You know, what's preventing him from getting that? You know, where has he been? What's his life been like? You know, there's just so many questions that you just keep answering. And then once you get an answer, then it always brings up another question. And then you answer that question, it brings up another question. So it's like this endless Chinese box of questions, one after the other after the other. And you keep chasing it down. So that's pretty much the process.
I mean, the funnier thing about, like, Les Mis is it's such a long, it's a long piece. It's 3 hours. It's 3 hours.
Not anymore.
Watching, but
it's shorter now.
Not.
It's shorter.
Yeah. It's shorter now than it was then, but originally it was 3 hours. In terms of, like, the camaraderie backstage versus onstage, was it always an ensemble?
Oh yeah, I mean, well, you work with people for that length of time. You know, you get close to people, and you know, it's and everybody's very professional, and you know, everybody does their job, and you know, it's not like it is in community theater. I mean, you know, in community theater, everybody, you know, gets really, you know, really close and tight, and everybody cries after the end of the show, and you know, it's the most wonderful experience in the world, and that's all great. It's terrific because, you know, you work with a lot of people very intensely over a short period of time, and you know, you get attached to people, and that's all great. But in the professional theater, you know, everybody's there, and they're there to do a job, and they're thinking in terms of their career, so everybody's, you know, minding their P's and Q's. And they're on their best behavior, and they're working as hard as they can to be the best that they can be, and they want to be a good collaborator with the other artists who they're working with, and, you know, they want to give the people their money's worth, and they always want to show up prepared, and they have a life outside of the theater as well. So people have families, and so they go to work, and they do their best work, and then they say, okay, we'll see you tomorrow, and then they go home, you know. There's not a lot.
Right.
Well, I wouldn't say there's not a lot, but you know, there's not as much, you know, oh, let's go out after the show and hang out, and, you know, so it's somewhat different because it is a job. That's a great job. And a really fun
it's a fantastic job. I mean,
it's work. But it's
right.
Work. It's really, truly really is work.
Who's your fun team?
Well, I did the show several times. Jackie Ferreau was my Fontaine. Alice Ripley was my Fontaine.
Wow.
Who else?
Did you have Randy?
Randy Graff.
The original Randy Graff. Yeah.
No, I did not.
She
was before my time. But I worked with some wonderful, wonderful people. I mean, people. I mean, I remember the night that Sutton Foster, who was in the ensemble at the time, she went on as Eponine, and I, you know, I was walking around backstage because I wasn't on at that point, but I stopped dead in my tracks. I was like, "Whoa, she sang the hell out of that song!" I was like, "Wow!" And I said to her afterwards, "Sutton, you sang the hell out of that song." And she went, huh? And I said, well, good for you. But that
right.
was really great. But that was before she got her big break and then became, you know, Broadway royalty. So,
she's great. But how is it opposite, Alice Ripley?
Oh, Alice is lovely.
Yeah,
she's lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was great. And she was terrific in the show. Just terrific.
I had no...
Yeah,
I know her from Next to Normal and a couple other things.
Sideshow.
I mean,
Sideshow.
And Sideshow, right. And then Rocky Horror Show.
Mm-hmm, yep.
As well. I mean, because I'm a huge Rebel as far as that as well. Huge. But... what was it like to work with Kendra and Ebb?
Oh, it was fantastic to work with Kendra and Ebb. I mean, they were great. I mean, my first Broadway show, I got to do, I got to do Kiss of the Spider Woman, which meant that
right.
Kendra and Ebb had written the show. Cheetah Rivera was the star. Brent Carver and Anthony Crivello both won Tony Awards for it.
That's right.
Terrence McNally wrote the book. It was amazing. Rob Marshall, who eventually went on to direct the film Chicago, he was the choreographer. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was an amazing all-star. You know, Hal Prince was the director. I mean, it was an amazing, amazing experience. And working with John and Fred, you know, John Kander and Fred Ed, really enlightening, especially as a young performer doing my first Broadway show. I remember we were in rehearsal one night, and you know, Hal, the director, and John and Fred, they were talking about they needed a new number. And, you know, it should go here. And so John and Fred went, okay, fine. And they went into this practice room. And the three of them, there was a lot of screaming and a lot of yelling. And then, Hal came out, and then they stayed in there and they worked on it. And then, like, maybe 30, 40 minutes later, they came out and they said, here. And it was a new number. And it was like, and it was great. So it was amazing to see that process, unfold. But John and Fred were so sweet, really, really lovely. They both sent gifts when my daughter was born. They're just lovely,
awesome.
Lovely people.
Fred's
not with us anymore, but they were both great.
Yeah, no, I was crushed when Fred died. I was in my room. When Fred died, I was in my room. And I'm a huge fan of a lot of their works, and I was just listening to it. Oh, my word. I mean, you can't get any better. You can't.
No.
You know?
Brilliant.
Maybe
brilliant.
Stephen Sondheim. Maybe Stephen Sondheim holds a close bar. But, you know, on the level of lyricism, you're going, okay, it's so simple, but it's so effortlessly complex. You know? You're just okay. Wow. I wasn't sobbing, but I was near tears, and my mom went, "What's the matter?" And I was like, "Fred Ebb's dead." You know, and it's God. Really, I mean, I love curtains as much as the next person, but that's about. We all know what that's about, but it's a shame that. The visit closed early, you know, because that was the last thing that they did, right?
Yep.
Or what?
Yep.
Or was it curtains? Or do I have it backwards? But
the visit closed already.
It did close,
unfortunately.
It just shuttered.
I didn't know. I haven't gotten a chance to see it. I was going to go see Cheetah in it, but I didn't get to. It's hard because I have a new baby as well. I have one daughter going to college, and I have a 10-month-old daughter now, too. So it's difficult for me to get out much.
Right. I mean, I think that along the other questions, Allison, did you have any other questions?
Yes. What kind of roles are you attracted to? When you are going about auditioning for different series or going into that, what I'm trying to say is, what roles most attract you? Are you most attracted to?
Well, to be quite honest. I'm not at the point in my career where people are throwing scripts at me. You know, I mean,
right.
I'm not an A-list actor in Hollywood.
Right.
I'm attracted to the ones that pay well. And then we start there, because I am at the point in my career where I can say, well, no, I'm not going to work for free. No, I'm not going to go out of town for that amount of money. No, I'm not going to do that for that much money. So, I can do that. So I can pick and choose in that regard. But, I'm attracted to the ones that will pay the rent, you know, and put food on the table and, you know, put money in my daughter's college funds and do that. Now, you know, that being said, I like roles that are interesting. But there's really not a lot of roles that aren't interesting, honestly, because I can find something to identify with in almost anything. And I can find an interesting, you know, thing about a person, you know, something in the script will leap out at me that they'll say, oh, that's interesting. And then that's my point of entry. That's where I'll go, okay, well, that was interesting. How do I explore that? And then, like I said earlier, that'll bring up another question. Well, why did they say that there? And then why did that person say that about them? Because he contradicted what I said over here. Well, that's interesting. So one of us is lying. So what's this about? So you keep going in further and further and exploring, and it becomes endlessly fascinating. So I can, you know, find gold in the smallest of roles or the largest of roles. I mean, you know, so as long as they're, you know, they're paying well, like if it's a network television spot, that's great. I'll go ahead and I'll do a day or two or three on a show, and, you know, I'll make it as interesting as I possibly can because I want to make it interesting for me, for the audience, and I want to give them their money's worth. So,
I guess I thought in Gotham when you're playing the medical examiner, when he went into his locker room and he discovered all the bones in there, and he's like, this isn't what it looks like. That was great because I love how Gotham's written. I mean, I wish I could be in a playwright, join the staff of writers because I could learn a lot from just how they write the show. But
the writers are wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, do they have a large crew?
You mean a large writing staff?
Yeah, large writing staff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not exactly sure how many people are on it. It varies from episode to episode, but yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people who write, you know, write in terms of a whole season, sure. And they have different directors coming in all the time. And, you know, the crew is pretty much constant, you know, all the technical people, and they're amazing. They're wonderful. And, of course, the cast stays relatively consistent, you know, depending upon who comes and who goes. But, yeah, it's a big operation. I mean, you know, to work on a Netflix TV show is quite a trip. It's really, really a wonderful experience. And to walk on those sets, you would not believe. I mean, you know, when you walk into the Wayne Mansion set, any of them, they're just amazingly detailed and beautiful. You know, like I want to live in that penthouse. It's just gorgeous. You walk in and you feel like. You know, you're on the, you know, the 30th floor somewhere in Manhattan. It's really great.
Right.
Yeah, so I mean, everybody are really terrific.
I think that in terms of just, like, the setup of that shot, when you drop the bones, and you're like, this is not what it looks like, is in that moment, I mean, was there anything running through your mind while you were shooting it, other than drop the bones?
I was thinking that I was totally busted. It's like, how do I explain this? It's like, this looks terrible. And, you know, it's like I got buckled my pants down, but I hadn't pulled my pants down. You know, it happened to me. It was like I felt completely vulnerable and completely screwed at the same time. So that's pretty much what I was thinking. This is not what it looks like.
I just thought, like, the way that they are pinning the season right now, I have no idea what's happening next. I do not know what's in Bruno's head, nor do I want to know, because, you know, it's always exciting. But how was it working with, Jada Pinkett? I mean, did you get to meet her?
I didn't have a chance to work with her. I wish I had. We did not have scenes together.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean,
no, it would have been good.
You got to work with Ben McKenzie, though.
Yes, and everyone I worked with was amazingly professional and terrific and lovely, as a matter of fact. I mean, really nice people as well as being very, very good at what they do.
I've heard that they have a lovely set. Like, everybody's... It's not quite a love fest, but it is a very, very friendly cast. You know?
Oh, yeah, no, it's terrific. They made me feel very welcome, and they were very professional. And I mean, you know, because that's the other thing about being on a television show. It's like time is money. So everybody
right.
has to come in, have to know exactly what they're doing. They have to, you know, rehearse. They have to hit their marks. You know, they have to just, you know, be on it because time is money. And it's
right.
very expensive. I mean, per minute, I can't imagine, you know, it's thousands of dollars per minute to have all those people there. So every minute you waste is,
The accountants are going crazy, basically.
What?
I mean, the network accountants are probably going absolutely insane.
That's
you
exactly
know.
Right. As well they should.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, what's your research process like for each role? You know,
the research?
How much when you say, when you say you get done some nitty gritty, like, is it exacting nitty gritty, or is it take the most important facts, live them up, and show them?
Take the most important what and show them? I'm sorry.
The most important facts.
Oh, well, I mean, it's not really about gathering facts. It's really about finding out about the world that you live in. It's about trying to, you know, to research, you know, the time and the place and the events that we're all influenced by. Like us in our world today, we're all influenced by events. You know, we're all influenced by the threat of terrorism.
Right.
Especially living in New York, we're all influenced by the frenetic pace of technology and trying to keep up with that. You know, we're all influenced by the things that have been happening with all these police shootings that that are happening now, and all the racial tensions that are going on, and it's just we're all influenced by these things and many, many other things on a daily basis in terms of what we do for a living and what's going on in that microcosm of the larger society. Mm-hmm. And so you try to figure out how you feel about your world that you live in. So you try to research what that world is, and you try to put yourself in that position, and you start with that big, outer world out there and the large events, you know, wars that are going on and political situations and things like that, and you kind of work it down so it gets smaller and smaller and smaller till you find out, you know, the world that impacts you directly. And you try to figure out how you feel about that, how it makes you feel, and what kind of a person you become, you know, what kind of values you hold, what kind of opinions mm-hmm. you form, all in, you know, in relationship to that. And I think that's what research does for you. It gives you a sense of who you are as a citizen of the world at large and your immediate world. And that informs, you know, everything that you say and do. So it's kind of like working from the outside and then, you know, working as it gets closer and closer to you. And that's what makes an interesting person. And that's what makes an interesting character, because the more you engage with your world as a person, the more interesting you become. The more interested you are, the more interesting you become. And so if you really get to know the world that this person on the page is, and you put yourself in that and familiarize yourself with their world, then, you know, you can begin to understand who they are and how they tick and, you know, what they want and all of that.
Right, right. I mean, I read that you worked under Leonard Bernstein.
Uh-huh, yeah.
What was that like? Because I'm a huge fan of West Side Story and Candide.
Well, I mean, he was brilliant. I mean, there's no question. I mean, I didn't work really closely with him. I mean, I was a member of a chorus of 90 people. I had a very brief conversation with him. I think he probably, you know, if he were alive, he probably wouldn't, but he might remember the first rehearsal that we had. I was at at Avery Fisher Hall, and the New York Philharmonic, and the New York Choral Artists, which was the chorus that I was a member of at the time. I was doing choral work to make ends meet while I was pursuing a career as an actor and singer when I was first starting out. And it was a great gig to get because I was doing Mahler with Leonard Bernstein and the New York Philharmonic. So it wasn't shop litter. But it was a great gig. But the very first rehearsal, I left my house so early. I left so early in order to get there on time and be the first one in my seat. And I got waylaid by this incredible, incredible traffic and all kinds of things. And the trains were down, and I got stuck in a cab trying to get there. And I had to run the rest of the way. And I walked in, and I was the last one to arrive. And he was stepping up to the podium, and I was walking past. This is a 90-member chorus. I was walking down my row in the end, and I was at the other end. I was like, excuse me, pardon me. And he actually had to wait for me to sit down. And I felt about an inch tall. So I think that was probably the best Leonard Bernstein story that I have. I mean, I told him at one point, he was backstage, and I said, Mr. Bernstein, I just wanted to say how much I admire your work and blah, blah, blah. And he just said, yes, thank you, and that was it. But that was the only,
concept. Right. That's amazing. I mean, are you sad about Nurse Jackie ending?
All good things.
What are your feelings about it?
I think everything has to come to an end, and it's time, it's a brilliant show. Edie Falco is wonderful to work with, as was, Tony Shalhoub. They were both wonderful to work with, and it was just a terrific show, and it had a great run, and I think it's great. There's, one more season, and that's it.
Well,
this is
the final season, I guess. Of it.
Yeah.
That's now
yep.
airing. And I'm just like, I visited that set, and that was kind of a humongous but small set. And to see, the person who plays Gloria Acolytis, and to know I'm in the same union with her, it's just amazing. I'm like, I met you before. And she's like, who are you? I'm like, okay, I'm blah, blah, blah. And he goes, she goes, oh, I met you. Oh, how are you? I'm like, I'm fine. I was like, I feel like 2 inches tall, but at the same time, holy shit, I'm here. Kind of thing. Don't embarrass yourself, but can you speak a little bit lower?
Just a little starstruck.
Kind of. Yeah, a little starstruck. I'm just like, I'm fine. No, you're not. Yes, I am. Allison, do you have any other questions? Or Johnny?
How was it working on Ugly Betty?
Ugly Betty was just a one-day shoot for me, and I did the next-to-last episode of the season of the show,
mm-hmm.
And I was the priest who married I forgot their names. I can't even remember the names right now, but I married the couple that everybody was waiting to get married. And
okay.
They worked out this elaborate thing for me to do, because that was a while ago. Ugly Betty was, Jesus, it was like eight years ago or something. I don't know. It's a long
time.
Yeah,
it's been a
oh,
while.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
It's been that long.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, but we worked out this elaborate wedding ceremony that they asked me to improvise. So I created this whole thing about the symbolism of the rings and it being a circle, and the circle of life. I went on and on and on and improv this whole thing, and everybody was like, wow, fantastic, great job, and I was like, I don't know where I made this stuff up from, but I made it up. And they all were like, oh, it was great. And then we got to the final cut when I saw the episode, and they just made a music montage out of it. So there was music playing. They didn't use anything. I had like half a second worth of stage time, and that was it. I was like, okay, well, there you go. No, it's not horrible. It's horrible. Just the way it goes. No, it's not horrible at all. I got paid. The episode said what it said.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing about film, you know, or television. It's like they make the decisions about how best to tell the story.
Right.
And you get, and I went, I gave so much good stuff, you know, and they decided for whatever reason that that's what the ending needed to be. They needed to tell the story quickly, and so I'm fine with that. You know?
Right.
Not a problem.
Right. I mean, it just in terms of like Secrets of Laura or Mysteries of Laura, what is that set like?
Well, the set that I worked on was like an interrogation room.
Right.
And you know, and it was you know, very realistic. It was a table, two chairs with Deborah Messing, myself, and another actress. I was her lawyer, and we were, you know, she was interrogating her, and I was protecting my client's interests, you know, advising my client not to to say more than was necessary. So there was a real battle of wits going on. You know, the set was, you know, the set was great. It did what it had to do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's such a funny show. I mean, what do you watch when you're not on TV? What are your go-to things?
Let's see. Well, I watch movies. I watch movies mostly. I do like to watch Gotham. I don't usually watch when I'm in it.
Right. Because every actor does not want to see their own performance and say,
"Well, you know, I mean,
oh, I did that wrong." You know.
Well, I do watch. I mean, I make sure I go back and I watch to see, you know how it came out. But you know, I like to go and you know watch, you know, just to see. But usually, I don't tune in live and watch. But yeah, I watch mostly movies. And you know, and I've got a 9-month-old daughter, so I spend a lot of time with my wife and my daughter and you know, and my older daughter, because like I said, this is her last year. She's going to be living at home, so I have a couple of months left, you know, and then she's gone off to college. So I'm trying, you know, to spend a lot of family time, and plus I'm working on an album right now. That's taking up a lot of my time, you know, an audio recording I'm working on. So I'm doing a lot of, I'm in the studio, recording vocals. And so, you know, that takes up a lot of my time as well, with the recording and then doing the editing and the mixing and things like that. So that's something I'm spending a lot of time with. And, yeah, and I've got a film coming up that I'm shooting in July, and I've got auditions that come up all the time, so I'm always preparing for auditions. You know, as they come up, you have to pretty much drop everything as an actor. They'll call you like the night before, and they'll say, you know, can you go in on this audition tomorrow? And I'm like, yeah. And plus, I teach quite a lot. I mean, I teach a lot of actors, and I teach aspiring actors and actors who are, applying for colleges.
Right.
So, you know, I have, you know, a lot of students right now. So I'm pretty busy between the album and the teaching and the auditioning, and then when I get a gig, the shooting. So there's lots of stuff to keep me away from the television. So that's why I'm kind of like, well, what do I watch? You know, I watch movies when I can, and then if I have time to watch television, you know, occasionally I'll do that.
Yeah. I mean, are you a fan of anybody else's stuff? I mean, like, whether
it's... I'm a fan of everybody else's stuff.
Right. I mean, in terms of actors, what advice can you give to other aspiring people, since you teach them and prep teacher actors for college and stuff like that? What advice can you give other people?
Gosh.
Just throw them off.
Well, you know, get as educated as you possibly can about the business of acting, because you might discover that it's a lifestyle that you really are maybe not suited for. There's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of hard work, and a lot of people are enamored of, you know, the red carpet, you know, lifestyle. You know, I mean, there's which is nonsense. I mean, most workers. I'm a working, you know, a successful working actor. I've never walked on a red carpet, you know, but that's everybody's dream, you know. So, you know, to have that as your goal, and that's what you think it's going to be like, is not a reason to get into the business. So if you become educated about the business and how it works and how you might fit into it, and if you really enjoy the craft of acting and of creating characters, and if you're fascinated by people, and, you know, all of that, that's a really good reason to get into this business. Then, if you're really serious about it, and, you know, you want to work hard and put in the time and the energy and the effort and the mind power and the heart and the soul and the sweat and all of that, then go for it. If that's really what turns you on, if that's really what fascinates you, then I wholeheartedly suggest you go ahead and do that. But if all that idea of all that work and sweat is not what really attracts you to it, then I would think twice about it before you invest a lot of time and energy, because it's the most wonderful, rewarding, exciting, frustrating, challenging career that I think you can choose.
Because I think second to writing. Yeah, I think second to writing and directing. You know, myself being an actor for a good portion of my life, I would agree with you. I mean, now I'm a writer because I love psychology, and I love getting into people's heads, and writers do that. And so, you know, I guess if you're going to become a writer and you're already an actor, then writing is the opposite of acting, just acting on paper and writing out exactly what you're going to do and making it, I guess, like, I mean, what is your take on it? In terms of writing versus acting.
What's my take on writing versus acting?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, well, they're. I mean, I think the creative impulse is pretty much the same, no matter how it comes out, whether it's through music or through writing or through acting or through painting or, you know, it's. I think the need to communicate something is you know, that's vitally important, is where it comes from. And the form it takes, I think, is just specific to the individual. It's you know, I think the source is the same. It comes from the need to speak in whatever form that it comes out, whether it's through song or writing or acting. It doesn't matter, really. So I think they're the same. Now, in terms of the actual disciplines, well, of course, they're vastly different. You know, actors can't necessarily be musicians or writers or painters, but they can express themselves through whatever medium they choose. So I don't know, writing versus acting, I don't really know how to really equate the two. It's like a basketball player and a baseball player. I mean, you know, they're both athletic endeavors, but they require vastly different skills. So, you know, I'm not sure how to answer that question, although maybe I just did.
Oh, you just did. You definitely did. You definitely did. Allison, do you have any?
Yes.
I'd say it's kind of like me making my jewelry. Kind of like same way.
Okay.
The creativity.
Yeah, Johnny.
Yeah.
My breed bracelet.
Yeah.
When it comes to... Was there any... Did anything... When you were on the daytime dramas, did anything... How was it working on Days of our lives and, or all my children. Well, I'm sorry. Messed up. Sorry about that. All my children and one life to live.
Well, I did those very early in my career, and it was really a great learning experience for me, you know, to be a part of those shows, because those people really, really work hard. You know, I think daytime television actors get a rough critique from people. They think, oh, they're not very good actors. But if you had to memorize all of the text that they have to memorize every day, and then enter the camera and hit your marks and make sure that, you know, you're mindful of your continuity and all of those things that actors on film have to do, or on set have to do, and still give a believable performance, it's really, really difficult work. And I learned an enormous amount just about being on camera. I remember standing on set, and because I was a new actor, and so I would kind of, when I wasn't shooting, I would, you know, kind of go and watch. And I saw them standing, you know, the two people who were on camera as they were doing a take, and I'm like, they're not doing anything. What the hell? You know, it's just like standing there and talking, you know. And I was a stage actor, so I was like, well, you know, not doing anything. It was terrible. And then I went over to the monitor and I watched the take afterwards, and I went, holy mackerel. And they were animated, and they were alive, and just a few feet away from them, you really couldn't tell what they were doing. But they had scaled their performances down because they knew the size of the shot that they were in. And it was eye-opening for me to realize if I had gone on that camera and I had done what I thought was good acting, I would have looked like a clown. I would have been so huge. But they were so adept at understanding the medium that they were in that, you know, from 10 feet away, they looked like they were doing nothing. But you watched it back on a close-up, and suddenly they were totally alive and totally in the moment. So it was a good learning experience for me working on those. And it was great, really, really great.
Cool. I mean, in terms of soap opera, you know, how does it compare versus, like, you know, you just said that, well, they do a lot of stuff on the monitor. I mean, in Nurse Jackie, for example, right, that's a multi-camera shoot, right?
Mm-hmm.
How close are you to, like, when they do all the guest stars, right? Tony Shalhoub is in, obviously, the season's guest star. But then there's the people who are in the beds, right, who are the patients who get rolled in, who are guest stars as well. Does that differ? I mean, like, when I haven't seen the ending of it, and I do not want you to spoil it for me because I haven't seen, you know, what's going to go on. But can you give us a thing of what it's like, just in terms of being on that set, doing that type of work versus soap operas? Are they the same?
What it's like being on Nurse Jackie as opposed to what it's like to being on a soap opera?
Yeah. I know it's a very weird question.
Well, but it's not really very different. It's working on a set. It's, you know, there's cameras and there's lots of crew people and they're all buzzing around and they're all intent on doing whatever their jobs are. And then your job is to breathe life into these people in a very believable way. And so you're concentrated on doing that. And that's the same on a soap opera as it is on a network show, like HBO or ABC or NBC or CBS, or it doesn't matter. You know, Netflix, it doesn't matter. It's pretty much, it's just all working on camera. So there's really not a whole lot of difference in terms of, you know, what your job is. A soap opera, you know, depending upon what you're doing, if you're a, you know, series regular on that, you know, then you're going to, you know, have a lot of responsibility and a lot of text. You can get up really super early and get there and get into makeup, and, you know, there's differences in terms of what your job function is. You know, if you're there for a week, if you're there for a day, if you're there as an extra, I mean, they're all different, but it's all basically the same you know, working on a set, a soap opera, or, you know, as opposed to a Nurse Jackie. There's really not a lot of difference.
That's, I mean, both are vastly different story-wise, too. I mean,
yes, of course. But, you know, from the actor's perspective, it's not much different.
Right. But it's funny because, like, I watch Nurse Jackie, and I just think, how the heck are they writing and shooting? They're writing one episode when they're shooting another. You know, they're constantly turning out story. And I guess in terms of the shelf life of whenever you begin a network, you know, TV show, is how much story you have to cram in as a writer. And then how much stuff they just go, oh yeah, that's going to be over in about a page. You know, for the actors. You know, it's just like...
Well, we're in a golden age of television right now. I mean, the writing of television is better than it's ever been. It's amazing the quality of writing that there is now. So
the quality of writing has gone to subscription stuff like Netflix and whatever. I mean, we're a huge Orange Is the New Black fan up here. We're also huge Nurse Jackie fans and Gotham fans and all that. But
that's for sure.
What?
I love me some Netflix, that is for sure.
Yeah. I mean, we all love
Netflix.
It's
great to be able to binge watch.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're all 90s kids or 80s kids over here, too, because we didn't have binge watching when we were kids, right?
No.
So, Just binge watching episode 1, 2, and 3 of Orange Is the New Black. You just go, you can do that in one night, you know.
Or anything on Netflix for that matter, if it's a series.
Exactly.
There's a lot.
Well, you know, as an actor, it's really great to be able to binge watch and just look up shows and download them, because if I get a call, because there's so many shows shooting in New York, something like 30 shows, I think, are shooting in New York. But, if I get a call about an audition, you know, and it's like, oh, man, I haven't seen that show yet, I can, you know, boom, I can just go and I can look up a bunch of shows and watch and get an idea of the style of the show, get an idea of what the storyline is, of where my character might be fitting in. And so I get all this information because I can watch it. Whereas when, you know, we were kids and we were growing up, you had to be there at 8 o'clock, tune into this thing, and, you know, you can watch that one episode, and then it was gone after that, you know? So it's great for me as an actor to be able to binge watch if I need to.
Right, yeah. I mean, this has been awesome. We have, like, 2 minutes to go, but we would love to have you on again.
Yeah.
Continue this as a part two, if you have...
I thought we were going to take callers and all of that. Oh, man.
I know.
Is it top of the hour already?
Yeah. We should schedule a part two. I mean,
yeah,
whenever you have time. We will definitely ask you back.
Yes.
Well, you're sweet. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome.
Always,
and it was excellent. You're always welcome.
So we
have to get going.
Yes.
All right. Well, terrific. Thank you so much, you guys. It was really great. And, to tell everybody, they can look me up at philiphernandez.net, or they can look me up at philip24601 on Twitter. And I love talking to people. So anybody wants to, you know, just, you know, get to know me or, you know, find out about my lessons or to, you know, find out my records coming out or just to ask me questions about the business, I'm thrilled to be able to meet people. I love that.
Fantastic. And we're thrilling to have
and
you. We thank you for coming on. It was brilliant. Yeah.
All right, you guys. Take care and thank you.
So, and
you're
good night.
You're welcome. You're welcome anytime.
All right. Good night.
All right. Good night.
Night.
Good night. And from all of us to all of you, good night. And we'll see Phil Fernandez, I guess, soon. Good night.
Bye. Bye.
Bye. Bye.